From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here to look at the cash grain market. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And along the way, I'll take you through the ag news for the day. We'll talk about the Farm Assets Conference and how you can pick up your ticket, what's happening there on the 22nd day of November. And we'll also touch base with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Check in with him about the agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the October 20th edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. I bet you're warmer there than we are here, Dan.
Yes, we are, but we did. We're starting to feel the cooler temperatures just like you guys are up there. So it was kind of rainy and cool this morning, but we got a strong south wind, so it did warm up here this afternoon. But it's almost November, and it turns cooler down here too.
Exports have been good for both corn and soybeans, relatively speaking. Ethanol usage in particular for corn seems to be pretty good, and that driven by both the export market and by miles driven, I think, in the United States. What do all these fundamentals tell you about the marketplace?
Well, I think, at least in the short term, I think when you take a look at the export book and the need for the exporter to accumulate cash inventories during the fall months here, and then strong domestic usage demand from both the livestock sector and from the ethanol sector, I think it tells you that corn has underlining support to it. I don't think it necessarily tells you we're in for a massive rally to the upside, but it does tell you that we do have underlying fundamental support. I think the corn market kind of got away from the end user. The corn market basically bottomed there the last day of August or so. I think a lot of traders were looking for the seasonal tendency of the corn market to move lower during September. Instead, it went counter seasonal. And then as the yield reports came in, it did indicate that probably that August crop report was the largest number that we were going to see. So all of a sudden, the market started moving gradually higher, and it's traced out a pretty nice sideways to higher trend here through the month of September that has extended itself here into October. Short term here, your technical indicators are at the overbought level. And so we did see a reversal to the downside today in corn. We did move higher for that move out of that late August low. And now we did close lower. But for the most part, I think that the market is considered sideways here. We're building a congestion area for the past 5 or 6 days. We'll see whether or not this has any downside follow through to it. I think we could maybe be entering another congestion type phase of the market, but I don't think it necessarily means that we put in the fall top. I don't think we've gone that far yet. It doesn't look like toppy action. It looks like more consolidation type action, and I think end users will probably buy the weakness that's generated here from an overbought technical condition.
Would you think you'd be willing to put a sideways to higher trend line in, and what would that look like as far as the channel?
Well, if you, let's say you take the lead futures and you come off of that low that we had there in late August and you connect it to the low that you had in late September, trend line support would kind of come into play here around probably in the 340s, 342, 344, 345-ish. So we closed the lead futures at 51. So I would say that, you know, a nickel down, you could probably begin to find the trend line traders anyway, kind of step up to the table and see if that trend line would hold. When you look at just the December chart only, you probably got a little more room to come down. You could probably come down to the upper 30s on the trend line. It would probably take a few days to get there. So by the middle of next week, you would have probably trend line support in the upper 30s, low 340s. So there is room for the market to come down. But my guess is you're going to find awfully good support in this congestion area that we had prior to breaking out earlier this week, or I guess last Friday, when we broke out of the 350 area. We've got an awful lot of support in the 340s here, so we'll have to kind of see how that works. But there's no doubt about it. Short-term indicators indicate that we are overbought. But when you look at the longer-term indicators, you look at the weekly indicators, you look at the monthly indicators, we're not in an overbought situation at all. So I do think traders will probably use this short-term overbought condition to probably accumulate inventories, especially the end user.
This is good news for producers. Will they have opportunities, do you think, before the end of the year to price out commercially stored grain that they've done nothing with, and they need to make back the storage?
Well, from my observation, I would say it's not uncommon for the seasonal strength that we, as you get into late October, to kind of level out. And I think that's kind of where we're at. I think the market still had, when I look at some of my timing counts, that we could maybe go higher on into the first week of November or thereabouts. A lot of times seasonally, you can keep the market firm, maybe into that Thanksgiving time frame. But corn has a strong seasonal tendency to weaken as it goes into that first notice day of December deliveries. So I would say that if farmers are looking for opportunities to maybe move some inventory, they should probably be doing that here over the next couple of weeks. Also, an observation that I've observed over the years, regardless of who wins a presidential election year, a lot of times the market will decline after an election. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it means either party could win or lose. It just means that sometimes once you have the decision made of who's going to become the next president, the market just has a tendency to relax, and you have a lot of liquidation activity in the marketplace. So that's just an observation that I've observed over the years. So I would say farmers, if they're looking at moving some corn, they should probably do that here in the next week or two, and then just kind of see what happens as we go into that November, December timeframe. But corn has a strong seasonal. They have weakness as it goes into December deliveries.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, despite the Obama administration's lifting restrictions last week on Cuba and a quest to normalize relations with that nation, House Speaker Paul Ryan says the embargo against Cuba will continue. The Wisconsin Republican blasted the Obama administration's latest round of regulatory changes meant to chip away at the U.S. embargo against Cuba and ease trade and travel with the island nation, the Miami Herald reports. The strong rhetoric by Ryan on Cuba appears to be increasing The embargo withholds financing for U.S. commodity shipments to Cuba, as the transaction and the shipment of U.S. commodities currently can only take place with third-party financing. Ryan says allowing normal financing would only finance the Castro's grip on power and jeopardizes property rights of American businesses. Well, Syngenta is seeking an appeal in a lawsuit filed by farmers regarding AgroSure Viptura branded corn. The corn contains a biotech trait that at the time of question was not approved for import to China, but was found in U.S. shipments to China in 2013 and 14. A group of farmers is seeking $5 billion with a B dollars in a lawsuit because they say the discovery of Viptura corn in the export system led China to reject U.S. corn, causing a price collapse of the commodity. The court decision created 9 classes within the suit. DTN reports Syngenta is asking for a chance to appeal the decision. Well, the U.S. Cattlemen's Association says proposed changes to live cattle futures by the CME Group will not address the concerns of producers across the country. CME Group is considering switching to a cash settlement price for live cattle futures, the same settlement process for other livestock futures operated by the exchange. Modifications to the fiscal delivery process are also being considered. USCA Marketing Committee Chair Alan Sense explains the need to evaluate the current state of the livestock marketplace is real, but says the proposal is a step in the wrong direction. USCA says the proposed changes will do nothing to impact the amount of high-frequency, overly speculative trading, which the organization says must be addressed to achieve market stability. Let's move to Washington, D.C. now, and the United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, has formed an internal committee to review and improve survey response rates after a record low number of responses. USDA says responses to the September 30th grain stocks report fell to a record low of 65.5%. Responses didn't improve much in October for the crop production report either. It came in at 71.3%. Those both are historically low. USDA is now working with groups like the National Corn Growers Association, or NCGA, to encourage farmers to respond to such surveys. And finally today, the 89th National FFA Convention is underway in Indianapolis, Indiana. At the opening session Wednesday, National FFA Advisor Dr. Steve Brown told FFA members that they need to start their engines in FFA and follow their dreams. He explains that means FFA members need to lead the way for agriculture's future.
We have a lot of challenges facing agriculture that we know by the year 2050, that we're going to have 9 billion people on this planet to feed. And so we've got to begin now to prepare, to train, to educate. And so it's really up to these FFA members and agricultural education leaders to make sure that they are getting started, are engaging in how that we can feed a hungry world.
The convention will wrap up with the naming of new officers and a final session Saturday afternoon. And that's a look at today's Agricultural News. Hey, I know you may be out of the field this afternoon, maybe just getting ready to go back in, but do take some time tonight or this afternoon to visit our website for the Farm Assets Conference. It's farmassetsconference.com. If you've got willag.org bookmarked, there's a link there. And buy your tickets for the November 22nd event in Normal, Illinois. This is a day-long event. We pick up at 10:30 a.m., but if you come early enough, 8 o'clock in the morning, you can go to the Illinois Corn Growers Association's annual meeting, and they certainly would like to have you there. They'll feed you breakfast. You can come on out to the Illinois Corn Growers Association's annual meeting in Normal on the 22nd day of November. That starts at 8 a.m. And then at 10:30, the Farm Assets Conference picks up. We'll start our event with a Farm Bill listening session. You know that the Farm Bill is soon to come up, and maybe sooner rather than later, in Washington, D.C. And the state's commodity associations, along with farm organizations, would like to know what you think about farm policies. And we'll begin by asking you some questions. And you can answer those questions. And there will be an open mic. And we'll also have Jonathan Kappas and Gary Schnitke there to talk about crop insurance and Ark County and all the kinds of things that producers use, CRP, all those sorts of policies that have a direct impact on farmers. We'll do that in the first hour and a half. And if you're there and you're a farmer, those commodity and farm organizations are going to reimburse you for your ticket to the Farm Assets Conference. So it's a pretty important function to really gather information directly from producers and their opinions on farm policy that come out of Washington, D.C. In the afternoon sessions from noon to 5, we'll have a corn and a soybean panel. Kevin Van Trump's coming in. Jerry Golke will be there. Ellen Dearden will be along with us. And Greg Johnson, Mike Zuzlow will be in from Kansas. Aaron Curtis should be there as well. Some others that I'll introduce to you, and you'll be able to get the chance to talk to them. We'll have a whole series of folks around the outside of the event that sponsor us and have booth space where you can talk to those folks. We'll take up data in a couple of different ways. We took up big data last year. We're going to do it again this year, but we'll talk about big data as it relates to how you will interact with it directly, whether that's in the combine, and you already do that some now, or in your home office space. And we'll also discuss precision agriculture and big data as it relates to nitrogen management and some work that the professors here on campus are in the middle of doing right now. The Bullock brothers, Dave and Don, should be on hand to do that. The Farm Assets Conference is just $30. It's the 22nd day of November, but you need to buy your tickets right now. Please visit our website, farmassetsconference.com, or go to willag.org. Let's check now in on the cash grain market. Matt Bennett is with us. He's at Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Did you get all finished up last week?
Yeah, we actually got finished up early this week. We're slow going over the weekend, but we were able to get everything done well before the rain, so we're in pretty good shape.
Happy in general with your commodities and yields?
Yeah, definitely happy. Best bean crop we ever had by a fair margin. And then the corn crop was pretty darn good, too. It wasn't quite 2014 standards for us, but it was really good.
What have farmers been asking you this week about marketing either corn or soybeans?
You know, a lot of the guys that had put corn in the bin are starting to think about, hey, at what point do I maybe want to go ahead and maybe sell the carry in the market, you know, hedge a little bit of corn. Other guys that sold across the scale and re-owned with strategies, you know, they've got a little bit of profit in them already, obviously, with the rally. And so they're kind of wondering when to start putting offers in. But it's each their own. And at this point, I think this nice little rally we've had has sure been a welcome thing here when we're still not done with harvest yet.
What's your background tell you from the elevator side about now until mid-November?
Well, it's interesting to see, you know, the basis on beans really hasn't been all that great, whereas corn basis has popped in the last 10 days, which is an interesting time frame considering you're seeing a fair amount of corn going on the ground. But, you know, my gut feeling is that if a few bushels get let loose of, the basis probably could weaken in the next month or so before it strengthens throughout the rest of winter. But that's just kind of my gut feeling at this point.
Have you talked to enough farmers to think about next year at all, and is that worthwhile?
We're looking pretty closely at next year. You know, a lot of guys are saying, I'm going to plant beans instead of corn next year. Profitability is better. But I'm telling them, hey, look at your profitability spreadsheet because input costs are are down substantially on corn. I've seen producers down from $50 an acre up to $75 an acre, depending on what kind of practices they're looking at. So definitely want guys to take a very close look at the numbers and then be willing to manage some of that risk if they're basing their cropping decisions on the economics.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Farmers are working really well across the United States, and in the Corn Belt, they've done a good job of getting the crop out. So I want to take some time at the moment to take a look back, Mike, if you can, with me over the last growing season. At this time last year, we were beginning to consider the 2016 growing season in some unique light as an El Nino, a strong El Nino, appeared to be developing. And then by the time we got to December, we knew that was the case. How did it all turn out, and why did it turn out the way it did?
Well, the growing season ended up being much warmer than normal during the key phases of corn and soybean development back in June, July, and August. that part of the outlook that was being developed 1 year ago now did fit what was expected, because we knew that when we had a very strong El Nino, that almost all of the summers that followed ended up being warmer than normal. And it wasn't just because of that alone. It was also because the winter had turned out to be unseasonably mild. If you remember, last fall and last autumn were both much warmer than normal. And there was a correlation there between that type of scenario and the following summer ending up warmer than normal. All of that happened, but the part of the forecast that we never were sure of, and the part that really took precedent over everything, was the amount of rain that fell. It was very interesting because there was always the threat for the summer to turn out to be drier than normal, only because it was expected to be warmer than normal. And a lot of the times, warmer and drier go together. When we were in June of this year, it was turning out that way. June was way above normal for temperatures, and rainfall had fallen far below normal across the southern half of corn and soybean production in the U.S. So everything was being set for a problem coming up in July and maybe even into August. But what ended up happening is it started to rain around June 20th, and then it started raining more and more and more and more. And it's been pretty unbelievable the amounts of rain that fell. Widespread coverage of way above normal rainfall throughout the month of July and throughout the month of August. And that's part of the reason that the U.S. corn and soybean crop did so well. Even though it was warmer than normal during some sensitive phases, there was enough water there to prevent that from being a major issue and even leading to a bumper crop. The U.S. soybean crop, compared to trend, is going to end up, at least if the USDA forecast is correct, as the best crop since at least 1960, once you calculate out the constant improvements that occur each year because of technological changes.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today to explain that. I do appreciate it, Mike. You have a good week.
You too, Todd. Talk to you soon.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois.